WTF1 presents Hot Takes Wednesday. Welcome back to another edition of Hot Takes Wednesday. I'm your friendly host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever after one of the best F1 races of the year, in at least in my humble opinion. That Italian Grand Prix was a very, very fun one indeed. So, of course, you've sent us many a hot take regarding that race. And joining me in the chair for the second week in a row, we really must stop meeting like this. It's Ollie Swift again. Good to see you, buddy. How's it going?
I'm going really well, thank you, mate. It's been another really good week of Formula One, so I'm really pleased to be taking on some of these hot takes with you.
Yep, second week in a row. Andy was on the WTF Unwrapped this past weekend as well. Thank goodness the royalty check is in the mail. it'll roll up sometime in August next year. Right, so for those who don't know, because every podcast is somebody's first, you, the fine WTF1 audience, sends us in your hot takes. The place you can do that is on our Twitter account, WTF1 Official. We put out a Hot Takes Wednesday tweet every Monday, which you can reply to. And, of course, you can also contact us via email, contact@WTF1.com if you want to email us. Or you can tag me somewhere on social media. You can DM me on Twitter @Dre_WTF1 or Instagram, just take out the underscore, DreWTF1 over there on that one if you want to DM me on there with your hot takes as well. I've tried to get a mix and match of as many as I can from different places over the course of the weeks and months. So once we send in your takes, me and our guest, in this case, Ollie, will discuss the take. We'll go a little bit of back and forth on it, and then we'll score it on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being that we strongly disagree with it, and 5 being that we strongly agree with the take. So, Ollie, you know what you're doing by now. Are you ready for another edition of Hot Takes Wednesday, my friend?
I'm excited, mate. Let's get into it.
Let's do it. Straight from the top and straight to the point from Chidi B on Twitter, who says, quote, Logan Sargeant won't have a seat in 2024. Simple and to the point. Logan Sargeant will be without a seat in 2024. So, Ollie, what do you make of that one, mate?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting hot take for sure. There's obviously been a little bit more scrutiny in the last few weeks of Logan than perhaps there had been earlier of the season, probably compounded by the success that Alex is having in that Williams and just the difficulty that he is having in finding that world championship point that he so desperately needs to contribute to the team. I also think it's quite an interesting one, though, because there's a lot of moving parts now happening, maybe more so than we were anticipating from just a few weeks ago in the driver market. You know, not all the seats are filled across the teams. There's some movement happening now within the Red Bull structure with AlphaTauri, with Liam Lawson. There's some people that I think Williams might be keeping tabs of to debate, maybe even buying some contracts out. There's even talk about Mick Schumacher having a little look in that role, obviously close association and legacy ties with Mercedes, with Williams at the moment as well. So there's a huge amount potentially that is causing Logan some risk. I think one of the things that even Nico Rosberg was talking about, I think just this morning or possibly yesterday even, was that with his connections to Williams as well, he understands that Logan does bring quite a significant package of financial investment. Williams maybe not as desperate for money as they previously were, but still, you know, every little helps, as they say. And I think, you know, if Albon stays at Williams for 2024, which I think he's contracted to, but there's, you know, people debating maybe even buying him out. Aston Martin could be an interesting landing spot for Albon, I always think, and have been thinking for a little while. There could be some room to chop and change. But I do think, despite his struggles, James Vowles has talked a lot about the slow incremental development and improvements that he wants to make at Williams. And I've got a sense that he's maybe a fan of stability. And if he can keep Alex performing really well, if Logan can just elevate his game and chip in with, you know, 10, 20 points maybe next season, 20 is maybe a bit of a stretch, but let's say he gets into the double digits next season, if he does keep hold of him, he'll be looking a lot better than he currently is. So much to consider there. I've rambled at you a long time there, Dre, but I just think that he will still be there for me come the end of this season. I think they'll give him one more stab at it. I think there's enough reason to keep him. He's shown a few flashes, but I think if some dominoes start falling elsewhere around the F1 driver lineup, that's when he might need to start having a quick look over his shoulder at who's chasing him down.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in there that I ultimately agree with. I think Logan's in a bit of trouble. And I think the reason why he's in a bit of trouble is there's been other rookies that have been very impressive this year. Oscar Piastri has been outstanding as a rookie at McLaren. He's been, yeah, the head-to-heads may not be so kind to him, but I think in terms of raw speed and ability, he's very close to what Norris is at the moment, which is good. Like, that's exactly what McLaren needed compared to Ricciardo last year. Liam Lawson, I think, is also on virtually next to no time, has had to come into a very difficult AlphaTauri situation, the bottom of the Constructors' Championship, very little seat time overall, and has immediately acted like he belongs. He was solid in Zandvoort, didn't put a foot wrong there. First proper weekend at Monza, was 11th, just outside of the points. That's excellent for a second weekend in F1. And a car and a team that's not in a particularly good place at the moment. So you look at those two rookies performing really well, and then you look at the Logan Sargeant, who I don't think has outqualified Albon once this year, and I don't think he's finished a single race this year in a higher spot than Albon has. He's put in what I call the head-to-head double donut, which is not ideal at all. Now, Williams tends to give their drivers time, which is good. You know, I like the fact that they tried to give their drivers time. I mean, they gave Nicholas Latifi 3 years. Now, I don't know how much of that was the financial side of what Latifi was bringing to the table as opposed to his actual ability. But Williams don't tend to make rash decisions on drivers. They tend to give their drivers time. I do worry about Sargeant, though, is that Albon has proven that this car is clearly capable of scoring points on a good day. And they have an opportunity here to maximize what they've got right now in this current car. It's clearly not a complete bottom feeder anymore. It's a good car. It's a lot better than what it was. It's seventh in the constructors right now. It's better than Haas, better than Alpha, and better than that bottom of the table they've been hanging around for the last half decade. They've got something here for the first time in a while. And having a second scorer that can get you in the points could be priceless at that level, given that we've seen how blocky the midfield can be. So Sargeant putting up the rear, finishing 13th, you know, got into a collision with Bottas off camera. We didn't see, but he was penalized for when he was running in the points for a good chunk of that race. I don't want to completely write off Sargeant. There is clearly something here. I don't think this is another Latifi situation or a Mazepin situation where he's a complete write-off. But at certain points, he's got to start standing out on his own two legs, and he's just not done that for me this season. And I loved the Mick Schumacher point you made as well, because James Vowles is close to Mercedes. He came from that Brackley unit, did 20 years over there. You know, it's obviously he's got ties to Toto. Toto wants Mick in a car. He's made that very clear this time since Mick's joined Mercedes as a reserve driver. You know, it suits all parties. There's a technical alliance there. He wants to get Mick in a car. Like it, and I think it would be an upgrade over Sargeant on paper. I think that's the play if you're James Vowles and Williams, if you want to cut bait with Logan Sargeant early. I think that's the way to play it if you're Williams. Whether Vowles wants to do that, I don't know, because like you said, I think you're absolutely right. He's playing it slow. He's just trying to put his plan in place and trying to instill some confidence and a foundation for Williams to build off of. I'm just not sure if Sargeant's the guy you want to commit to long term if you're going to make that work. So I'm leaning towards agreeing with Chidi on this one. I think there's too many decent drivers that could potentially be on the market next year. I'm still not sure what they're going to do with Tsunoda. Does Liam Lawson want a seat permanently? If Williams are prepared to take Albon on loan with Red Bull backing and Red Bull sponsorship, why couldn't they do the same with someone like Tsunoda or Lawson? You know, that's a possibility. If they really are committed to Ricciardo, even post-injury for next year as well, that could be a way of compromising a lot of people and pleasing a lot of parties. Mick Schumacher could be available. I'm sure he would take the opportunity to be back on the grid if he could get it. I just think they're all better options than Logan Sargeant right now. I think Sargeant's like the bottom of of thoughts as to what I would do with Williams right now if I was in Val's position. So with that in mind, I'm going to say four, Chidi, on this take. I think I generally agree with the idea that I think Logan might be one and done, which is a real shame for him. I don't think he's a bad driver at all. It's just so ruthless for driver talent now in Formula One. The grid is as good as it's ever been, in my opinion. And when that's the lay of the land in Formula One right now, it makes you have to be so much better to be able to justify keeping your seat. And Sargeant just hasn't, for me, done enough to justify it. How would you score it, Ollie?
I don't want to be that guy who goes down the middle of the road, but I can't quite stretch to a four, and I can't pull myself to a two either. So I am going to go three.
Okay.
I think it's a toss of a coin for me. I think it's the total clash between what you've just said, Dre. You know, is it worth them taking some of the talent that is probably going to be available at the end of the season still, or sticking with what they know and not having to go through any of that change and try and keep the forward momentum? So I think it's literally 50-50 for him at the minute. So I'm going to go three.
Three. You cop out. You got the three out of the way and we're less than 10 minutes in. Terrible form. Terrible. Can't have that. I kid. Right. Take number two comes from Daydream Cinema on Twitter. And Daydream Cinema says, and this is a controversial one, that is totally not going to split the room. Max's success and the praise he's getting shows the lack of appreciation people have had for what Lewis has done. 10 wins in a row gets more praise than 103 wins and 7 championships. There's always a double standard with Lewis. Oh, boy. Okay, guilty secret, I may have picked this one. I am fanning the flames a little bit here. Max's success and praise he's getting shows the lack of appreciation for what Lewis has done. 10 wins in a row gets more praise than 103 wins and 7 titles. There's always a double standard with Lewis. Now, I'll take this one first, and because I picked the thing, it's only fair. I think a lot of this is based on perception. And I think the old phrase goes, perception is 9/10 of the law. Now, I'm going to assume this person is a Hamilton fan, because I don't think you would send in a tweet like this if you didn't support him. Are we revising history? Are we pretending that Lewis didn't get any special treatment for some of his big milestone wins? Because he absolutely did. I remember his 91st win and Mick giving him one of Michael Schumacher's helmets. That was a beautiful gesture. I remember the Senna family, when he overtook his pole position record, gave him one of his helmets. I remember the big effort Formula One made with special graphics and whatnot when he won his 7th title. I remember the highlight montage they displayed. That was such a cool moment. I absolutely adored that when he won that 7th title in Turkey. The 100th win was montaged and graphiced up and put all over social media. I don't think that Lewis's achievements have been watered down in any way, or that they've not been appreciated enough. I think when you're on the outside looking in, and this is a bit psychology from me, you know, this is just my opinion. I think if you're on the outside looking in and somebody else is being successful, you're probably not going to get behind it as much as if it's your favorite driver that's going through those moments. And I think that's naturally going to happen when on one side of the coin, if you're a Hamilton fan, you had that dominant run of winning through the turbo hybrids, while on the other side of the coin now post 2022, it's been Max getting that same attention. Two completely polar opposites in terms of drivers and fan bases and who they like more. I just don't believe that Hamilton's achievements have been like squashed. I think people are just very in the moment. I think that's how sports generally is consumed. I think it's a very reactive thing. I think it's a very in the moment sort of thing. So of course, in real time, Max is going to get a bit of rub for 10 wins. We've never seen that before in F1 history. And contrary to what Toto Wolff thinks, even though Wikipedia is my second home, I do believe it's a bit more important than just relegating it to stat nerds. Ollie is a quiz master, and I'm sure you've used Wikipedia on many an occasion yourself. What have you made of Max's 10 wins and how it's gone down in terms of the community in general? And do you think there's a lack of appreciation for Lewis?
I don't think so. I totally agree with your stance. You know, people live in the extremes when it comes to sport. You know, I'm a huge football fan. I go to Walsall games every week. You're either ultimately depressed or totally jubilant, and there's very rarely time to settle in the middle. And when you know, step back, or when you try to create podcasting content like this, you know, it's good to try and become a little bit more objective. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Dre. You know, Lewis was getting the praise he deserved at the time when he was doing all these things. All the amazing records he was breaking, all the race wins, you know, he was the man. And, you know, right now Max is the man, and he's the guy who should be getting the praise. And I think, as you said, I imagine Daydream Cinema is a Lewis fan. And so what he probably sees on socials and what gets most reaction from him is probably the Max praise, because you tend to gravitate towards the things that rile you up and get you a little bit more frustrated.
The pronouns
annoyed.
She, her, just to quickly interject there. Sorry about that. That's my bad. I should have made that a bit clearer.
No problem. So yeah, in terms of what they're probably perceiving, they must feel like Max is getting all the praise right now, because it is everywhere. I saw some stuff on social about, is there some weird agenda in the media sphere at the moment to push and promote Max and talk about how great the 10s wins are as opposed to the dominance? But I think that's just people realizing that there's been so much back and forth between Lewis and Max fans for so many years now that you do have to sit and appreciate it. And I think you hit the nail on the head. 10 wins in a row, we've never seen it before. We should be making a big deal out of this, whether you think it's boring or whether you think it's the greatest thing to ever happen. You know, this really is something special that has occurred. And I think if Lewis had done it, you'd be hearing about it just as much.
Absolutely. I mean, Hamilton is the greatest statistical driver in F1 history. And I think also a small part of that problem is that Hamilton virtually ran unopposed for about 6 years in the middle of that turbo era. I mean, Rosberg was a threat for a couple of those years. Vettel was on the outside looking in a little bit, but wasn't able to put a full campaign together. Towards the back end of that dominant run, Lewis was really cranking it up. Like 2020, I remember, he won 11 out of 17 that year. That was a ridiculous season. It's probably Hamilton's best year. And yeah, I think Formula One is a sport inherently based on dominance. It's one of those things that you cannot avoid. It is an engineering. Like, the problem is, we as fans, I think, care most about the drivers when it's an engineering sport, first and foremost. The best car tends to win 95% of the time. You get outliers here and there, but it's rare you get two cars on the same level throughout a whole season. And like I said, if you're supporting one guy and the other guy, your arch nemesis, is winning, chances are you're probably not going to be that excited about it. And when people dominate, I think people get more cynical in general. I think it's like, oh, well, Max just wins every week, in the same way that it was Lewis winning every week, or Vettel winning every week, or Schumacher when I was a youngster growing up. I sound old saying that as a 31-year-old man, but here we are. That's the bread and butter of Formula One. That's what makes it what it is as a sport. And like I said, I think when you're in the here and now, and the way sport is, you react to in the moment. You glorify the present and you hype up the future more than look back to the past. And I think it's easy to look back at Lewis's time and say, well, maybe we didn't give him enough credit. And there might be something to that. But from what I remember as a fan, Lewis was getting plenty of praise. I've said it before, he's a transcendent star. He's like a Usain Bolt, a Ronnie O'Sullivan, a Roger Federer, someone who can bring people in who aren't normal watchers of their sport. Like, that's, for me, is the elite tier of some of the biggest name athletes in the world. And I think Hamilton is in that conversation. So I think it's easier to look back and say, well, maybe we didn't give him enough credit. In some cases, I think that's true. Nico Rosberg, I often use as an example. He was a lot better than we gave him credit for at the time, in my opinion. But you look back at it now and you go, well, yeah, you probably didn't give him enough credit for being so close to Lewis in the end. Perception is 9/10 of the law. I'm going to say 2 overall on this take. I don't think it's a howler. I don't massively disagree with it. But I generally disagree with the notion that Lewis didn't get enough appreciation. I think he absolutely did. I just think that it's more based on the fan divide between Lewis winning now and Max winning and the transition we've had since 2022, I would say. What do you reckon, Ollie?
I think it's not a howler of a take. Like you said, I completely understand it, but I am going to go with one because I do just disagree with the premise of it. Totally. I totally understand where they're coming from in terms of their view, but I just don't think that, you know, there's a lack of appreciation for Lewis at all. And I'm a Lewis fan, so I say that with love.
Most popular driver in F1 doesn't get enough appreciation. can't say I fully get behind that one personally. But thanks for the take, Daydream Cinema. Apologies for the key mentions a little bit there. That's my fault for not putting pronouns in the notes I took. That's on me, so I apologize for that. We'll be back with some more of Hot Takes Wednesday right after a word from our sponsor for this episode, DraftKings. College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is the great offers from DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code WTF1. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code WTF1. The crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778/HOPENY or text HOPENY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling at calling at 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort KS, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. See dkng.co/football for eligibility, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issue. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. Terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/football terms. Back to the show. Take number three comes from Marcin Zygmunt. Marcin, I've seen you on the show before, my friend. Marcin says, Vettel's record was more impressive than Verstappen's. Vettel's record was more impressive than Verstappen. So we're praising Vettel's 9. I assume we're talking about here more than Verstappen's 10. What do you make of that one, Ollie? Because I know you're a Vettel fan as well. We're both in the same boat. We both saw those streaks.
I think the, you know, numerically speaking, 10 is greater than 9. However, that being said, I do think that Seb's 9 in a row was perhaps more impressive. I'm using inverted commas for those listening. More impressive in the sense that that 2013 season didn't actually have the Red Bull dominance until the second half of the season. So what I mean by that is we had, I think we had Lotus win a race. We had Ferrari win races. We had both the Mercedes guys win races during that season. And then Vettel just came in towards the end and absolutely dominated through from Belgium to Brazil. Whereas what we're sort of seeing with Max right now is that there only seems to be one contender for a race win at the moment. Now, if the final half third of the season that we've got left, we suddenly see loads of other winners, maybe we'll look back and think, you know, was that actually more impressive from Max at the start of the season? But the margins by which he's winning and the ease at which he is just being able to, you know, front row to victory, back of the grid to victory, maybe because it's so recent and it's been so relentless right now, you know, I don't really feel like he has been challenged for a race win almost up until this weekend where Carlos gave him one of the toughest challenges for it. You know, Seb's first win that season was round 2, didn't win again until round 4. So there's a little bit more, you know, back and forth during that season. So in that sense, it might have been more impressive for the run that he went on. However, I think any standalone record in Formula One needs to be viewed with the appreciation that it has. So I guess it depends how you define the term impressive. You know, when we look back, the record books will show the number in the column. It won't show how and when they won and by what margin. We'll just see that 10, which is probably going to become 11, maybe 12, maybe 13.
Who knows? Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. The word impressive is maybe what's throwing me, but I generally can see what they mean.
Yeah, this is a tricky one because I was a huge Vettel fan, obviously, growing up and he, like, as I was becoming a content creator, it was right in the middle of Vettel's run of dominance. And 2013 was kind of an interesting time because the turbo hybrids was a year away. I think a lot of Red Bull's competition had shut it down around summer break sort of time, preparing themselves for their 2014 cars, which was obviously a huge part of the next chapter of F1. Red Bull kept their foot on the gas. I distinctively remember that. And that's what led to Vettel winning 9 in a row. And the thing that's a kicker for me in this is that Vettel did have a couple of threats here and there. His teammate was still good enough to stay with him on occasion, Mark Webber at the time. And Romain Grosjean was also very solid around that sort of time in the Lotus as well. There was a couple of races in there like Japan where he was a genuine threat for Vettel on those days. And I think I could see why somebody would make that argument about Vettel's run because Max's situation at Red Bull is, well, let's cut to the chase. It's not exactly ideal from an entertainment standpoint. You know, no one is challenging Red Bull in terms of quality of car right now, and Sergio Perez has struggled for a lot of this 10-race streak, specifically in qualifying. He's like, Perez has not given himself very many opportunities to try and win one of these. This was probably the best Perez has been in that 10-race run. Unfortunately, even then, he was still 6 seconds off. So I could see the argument, certainly. But I think there's asterisks you could use on both of these streaks if you really wanted to. I think Red Bull did have a dominant car towards the back end of 2013. But I would also say that I think Vettel back then did suffer a bit more hardship to get through those 9 wins. But again, you could also look at Verstappen's streak and go, well, some of these are also a bit dodgy. Like, for example, we've had a lot of rain this season. You know, like Zandvoort was a messy Grand Prix where one wrong strategic move or driver error could end your day. Like, that is the sort of race that is a minefield for something like that. Canada, for example, Silverstone, McLaren came out of nowhere and was pretty close. And we had a late safety car as well, which could have messed things up. There's pros and cons on either side of this one for me. I don't normally do this. I'm going to take the free option on this one. I don't want to, but I think you could probably craft a valid argument one way or the other on this one. I think there is certainly things you could say that could maybe take some of the gloss off Verstappen's 10-race one. Obviously, most ridiculous F1 car we've probably ever seen. Perez hasn't been great, but there's also, you could kind of do the same for 10 years ago with 2013 and Webber not being so great. It was his retirement season. Not a particularly impressive set of cars that could beat Red Bull towards the back end of that season either. Maybe a bit of Lotus, but not much that was threatening Seb towards the end of that year either. Maybe a bit of Mercedes thrown in there as well with Rosberg and Hamilton. But I think you can kind of make that same case for either streak. So I'm going to say 3 on this one. What do you reckon, Ollie?
I've played my 3 joker, so I'm going to go 4. I'm going to say I probably slightly agree with that statement. I think to your point, yeah, you know, they focus so much. We then entered the Mercedes dominance era, but I do think hardship is a great word, I think, that you use there. I think Seb maybe had to get through a little bit more to do them, so I'd say the 9, the joint 9s, Seb's is better, but Max's 10 beats Seb's 9.
Entirely fair. I completely get that. And I respect the fact you play this game on hard mode and only use the 3 once. You have my respect, Ollie. I do appreciate it. Even though you used it straight away, which might be difficult coming down the line here, but yeah, we'll have to wait and see how these last 2 takes go down. Take number 4 comes from Kevin Snodgrass, who sent me a DM on Twitter. Let me quickly refine it again. It says, yeah, since the F2 champion can't return to F2, they should get an automatic promotion to F1, and the lowest scoring F1 driver should be relegated. Love the podcast. Look forward to it every week. Thanks for all you do. Thanks, Kevin. That's very kind of you, my friend. So one more time, since the F2 champion can't return to F2, they should get an automatic promotion to F1, and the lowest scoring driver should be relegated. We're going football on this one, Ollie. We're going automatic relegation and promotion, which I think is fun. It's an interesting idea. I mean, what do you think of that, first of all? What's your gut telling you on this one?
I think something like this would be really entertaining. I think the premise of it is great on paper. I think the practicalities of it make this really something that just wouldn't be viable for the sport and not really an option that Formula One could pursue. I think, the rule that the champion can't return it's there in good spirit. I think the idea was hopefully they would filter on either to other greater series or into Formula One. But I think realistically, an F2 driver's dream is to become a Formula One driver. And obviously it is the next step down in terms of that formula route within, the F3-2-1 structure. So, I don't think it can happen realistically, but I like the idea that there should be something to do. One idea I heard forever ago would be there would be like a Formula One own works team that is somehow, outsourced to one of these manufacturers who want to come in. And then every year, the F2 guy comes in, gets a 2-year contract, the next one comes, and you give this sort of breeding ground to talent in what would probably be quite a poor car. So that was quite an interesting idea I heard once. So I love where Kevin is coming from. I think the idea, like you said, sort of in the football realm, I love it in principle, but I just think the practicalities of it in terms of drivers, contracts, money that comes in, loanies, people's dads owning teams, all this sort of stuff. It's just, it's not something that would be viable, but the premise is brilliant.
Yeah, I love the idea. It's a fun idea. As a big football fan, I try to hide the fact I'm a Manchester United fan where I can at the moment. It's not been the best of weeks. But yeah, I get the premise. I do love the idea, the whole idea of promotion and relegation. And it's one of these ideas to try and make Formula 2 a bit more relevant at the moment, because yeah, F2's in a tricky place right now. We've got an abundance of young talent in the sport. Promotions are hard. It's not a sustainable series for young drivers to be competing, given the amount of money they have to raise to be in there. You're under time pressure to, probably ideally win it or at least come close within 2 years. Otherwise, you probably won't get an F1 seat. You're not getting paid for it. There's a lot of problems with Formula 2 in terms of how it functions as a junior ladder series. So this is true, because in IndyCar, if you're a fan of IndyCar, you get a guaranteed at least part-time deal in IndyCar if you win their second series, the Indy Next series, formerly known as Lights. And I would like to see something like that in Formula One, as something as, a guaranteed path of progression, I think is something that, I would love to see happen. But as you say, feasibly, it would be impossible to maintain. Because first of all, who's signing them? Whoever wins that promotion, like, one team would be guaranteed and obligated to sack one of their current drivers and then bring in whoever this Formula 2 champion graduate is. Like, what sort of contract guarantee would there be on something like that? You have to sack the person that gets relegated. They have to go into an F2 seat. The sponsors that driver may have might not be able to carry them over into F2. They might not be as valuable because not as many people watch that junior series. What if the relegated driver wants to leave the ladder altogether, maybe go to IndyCar? We've seen that very commonly with a lot of their drivers recently. Yuri Vips, Marcus Armstrong, Christian Lundgaard, all over there in America now, doing well in IndyCar. Well, maybe not so much Vips, but Lundgaard. Oh, that boy's a talent. You can see where I'm getting at here. Feasibly and logistically, it would be impossible. And it's such a shame, because I agree with the ultimate premise. I want to see guaranteed promotion. I want to see a clear path for younger drivers to get to Formula One, because I look at the situation right now in F1 and I think, is anybody coming up next year? Like, Theo Pourchaire might, if he wins the title. He's got one hand on the title going into the final round at Abu Dhabi at the end of the season. He's probably going to win the title. He's got a 25-point lead. And Alfa Romeo could easily say, we're happy with Joe. So Pourchaire misses out again, and he's done 3 years in Formula 2 already, so what happens next? You know, it's... I get the frustration because there's no one else that leaps off the page as an F1 prospect. Maybe not this year, maybe next year. Like maybe an Oddie Behrman or maybe, you know, Victor Martins, for example. I want automatic promotion. It's just... there's too much political red tape and there's too many contracts to iron out for that to ever make it work. But I love the idea, Kevin. It's a 5 for the idea.
Yeah.
But ultimately, though, I have to say 1 because it's just not possible. But man, I would love for it to find a way for that to happen. But I love the idea, Kevin, and I hope you appreciate that. But it's just not doable, unfortunately. So I have to say 1. I'm going to assume you're in agreement here, Ollie.
Yeah, it's going to have to be a 1, but not because of what's been said as the take, just because the practicalities are so hard. I think it's a brilliant idea, but yeah, 1 just because it's just not viable.
Yeah, exactly. It's a shame. But Kevin, we love the idea. Like, for what it's worth, I'm sure it's worth something. It's a brilliant idea. I love it. I love bringing a bit of football into play. I get an excuse to talk about football on an F1 podcast. Love that. It's just not doable in F1 the way it is right now. There'd have to be a lot of political wrangling and you'd have to be fundamentally changing how contracts are written for that to be able to work. And that is going to be an issue. Right. We got time for one more quick take and it's come from Paul Haboba on Instagram. Hi, Paul. And Paul says, Leclerc is the only driver who gets remembered for 4 or 5 good races a year. Anyone else would have been criticized by now. I wonder if this is on the back of Carlos Sainz this past weekend. Any guesses? Leclerc is the only driver who gets remembered for 4 to 5 good races a year. Anyone else would have been criticized by now, says Paul. What do you make of that one, Ollie?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I think Charles benefits massively from being the sort of, you know, Ferrari poster boy in the sense that they gave him that really big contract. They were very keen to get him in very quickly from Alfa Romeo, from Sauber, to bring him into the team as well. And it looked like he was the next guy to go on and do something. And I think the problem that he's had is that he's just not really had the car to challenge all the way through consistently through an entire season. You know, that debut season he had in 2019 with the Ferrari team, not his debut season, first season with Ferrari was brilliant. Lots of podiums. He got those back-to-back wins. He went on a really good spree where he seemed to be on the podium constantly. But he was competing in that era where, again, you know, Mercedes and Red Bull were just a little bit too quick. Had his best season last year where, at one point, you know, it looked like he started with a 1-2-1 or a 1-3-1? I can't remember, but he won 2 of the first few races and it seemed to be really looking like we had a scrap on our hands. And then, you know, the Red Bull dominance came again. So he does seem, I don't want to say protected necessarily, but I think he has a lot of, he's got a strong fan base, he's got a really strong fanatical story behind him. He's the long-term guy that Ferrari want to look to, and I don't see him going anywhere. And I wonder if maybe that's where this criticism from Paul is maybe coming from. He almost seems, you know, unmovable no matter what happens. But I wouldn't say that he only has 4 to 5 good races a year. He has lots of really great races a year. He just doesn't really have the car to consistently be where he would want to be. So I understand, I think, where Paul's coming from, if I understand where the frustration from him is. But I think I would maybe disagree with it on the face of that question.
Like, Charles Leclerc was championship runner-up last year. Like, he was comfortably better than Carlos Sainz over a full season. And I think people... like, Ferrari fans, because I noticed this take came up 2 or 3 times in when I was looking through picks to take for this episode and takes in general. Do people like Carlos Sainz's consistency that much more than Leclerc? Is that it? I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Carlos Sainz is a very solid pair of hands. I think he's a very safe pair of hands. He's only finished outside of the points twice all year. He's racked up points in unideal situations week on week. And there is something to that. That's absolutely a praiseworthy quality to have in a racing driver. Charles Leclerc is just a better racing driver for me than Carlos Sainz is. The upside in that Ferrari setup clearly comes from Charles. Like, Charles has had 3 podiums this year to Sainz's 1. Some of the DNFs have been more down to Ferrari. Like Bahrain was a complete disaster. He was running 3rd in that race. They burned through both their electronic stores and he ended up starting Saudi Arabia with a grid penalty. The second race of the year. Now, don't get me wrong. There is a couple of rounds a year where Leclerc will bin it. Like Australia was a rough one, for example. But the upside in that team clearly comes from Charles. I think he's one of the best qualifiers in Formula 1. He's got 20 pole positions in his career already. He has 5 wins. He was clearly leading that title threat in 2022 when that season started. I've not seen any evidence that Carlos Sainz is one of these guys that can go into a weekend and potentially win week in and week out. I think, all things being equal, I think Charles is just a better driver overall. And I would rather have the guy that's a little bit more peaky than the consistent guy, because you need to win races to win championships. And Carlos has done it once in his career. And even that Silverstone win was a complete Horlicks from Ferrari. You watch that race back. It was a strategic disaster. Ferrari was trying not to win that race and they just about won it anyway. I will die on this hill that Leclerc is just a better racing driver than Carlos Sainz. I like Carlos. I think the way their two drivers are complement each other very, very well. But I just think Leclerc is your ceiling and I think Sainz is your floor. That's how I've always looked at those two at Ferrari. It's a great pairing. It's a great set of drivers to have in a team. And they are far from the problem at Ferrari. But Leclerc is him. I think he's one of the best 2 or 3 drivers in the world, Leclerc. I genuinely do. Sainz, I think, is a tier below that personally. So for me, I'm going to say 2. I disagree with this. I get the argument and Leclerc does have the bad days and the bad days stand out more at that higher sort of level. But I would happily have Leclerc over Sainz for a full season, comfortably. What do you make of that, Ollie, real quick?
Well, I think your rant there proves to Paul that you can't criticise Leclerc at all. Otherwise, Dre will come and protect him at all costs.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'll get my brass knuckles out of the drawer. No, I'm joking.
I think I agree with you. I think it's a 2 for me. I think I can sort of understand where Paul's coming from, but I wouldn't say he doesn't get criticised. I would say maybe, you know, as you've just pointed out, you know, he's maybe a little bit more peaky, but I think he's remembered an appropriate amount for remembrance.
Yes.
So I will go 2 on that one as well.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you on that one. Ollie, tell the good people where they can find you before you get out of here.
Awesome. Yeah, find me on TikTok predominantly, Ollie Swift F1 there for the F1 Quickfire Quiz. You can also find me under that same handle, Ollie Swift F1 on Twitter and YouTube as well. So yeah, check out those for daily Formula One quizzes and my occasional thoughts on the news of the Formula One world.
Yeah, check him out there, please. He does great content. And again, Ollie's a fantastic guest to have on the show. We very much enjoy working with him. Please give him a bump from me already. We'll be back next week for more of your spicy hot takes on Hot Takes Wednesday. I've been Dre Harrison. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys soon. Sayonara.